We're continuing with the Ramban, Drashat Torat Hashem Tamima. We're up to the second chapter, the 11th paragraph, page Chaf Aleph in the Chazon Yoel edition. Last time we discussed how prophets see prophetic vision. We discussed the idea that a prophet sees the vision with his soul, gets the interpretation with his soul, and then uses his own wording to transmit the message. We discussed the Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin about En Shnei Nevi'im Mitnabim B'Signon Echad, the idea that there is a signon, a style to the prophet, which is really his terminology, his wording, his vernacular. And then we also discussed the idea that Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy is different, where by Moshe Rabbeinu, every word was given to him by Hashem. It's very different than the prophecies of the other prophets. And the Ramban said it in one sentence. He just said that Hashem gave him the wording and he wrote it down. We expanded to understand how big this concept is, that in Torah every word is ordained by Hashem. It sometimes frustrates us because we see so many words where we don't understand why they're necessary. When the Torah repeats 12 times the donations, the dedications of the 12 different tribes, and you have 72 psukim there or 96 psukim there, all describing the same sacrifice 12 times over, so you wonder, why was that necessary? Why did the Torah do that? And I don't have a good answer. I have answers, but none that I feel really calm me and tell me, yeah, that's perfect, I understand. So we have answers, but they're not what we'd like, or at least not what I'd like. What?
They calm you or something?
No.
I find like I look at certain parts of the Torah where it says, you know, be kind, be honest, treat your wife with respect. It's like, oh, okay, so it's telling you.
That's fine, but when the Torah repeats itself 12 times, so you wonder why was that necessary, and you need a really good answer for that. Because every single word, so Hashem told us to write that word, and that means that word is very important. Our sage's classical example is the verse we read recently, V'timna hayata pilegesh le'elifaz. Timna was the concubine for Eliphaz. Why does that matter to us? So our sages say, yeah, even that verse, you should know, Hashem told him to write those words, and it is important. Yes?
Is it possible that if Torah, for example, repeats 12 times, you should be Shomer Shabbat 12 times, and 3 times you should not kill, that maybe in eyes of Hashem, not being Shomer Shabbat is worse than being a murderer?
I'm not aware of a source that says that. We do have places in Talmud where the Gemara says the Torah repeated it to strengthen it, to stress it. But to say that I can compare mitzvot and say if this is stressed more times, it's more important, it's a little hard. Again, when the Torah stresses over and over again to treat a ger nicely, so the Gemara says that's to stress to us the importance of that mitzvah. But now you'll tell me the Torah didn't say don't kill so many times, so that's more important than that? I don't think so. I think it's maybe it was obvious that don't kill is important and the Torah didn't have to stress it.
The other one. Easily.
Right. I'm saying, so it's hard to say that would be a reason. You're right in that repeating it stresses it, but I can't say that.
Because we see it, the Torah don't repeat for no reason, right?
There is a reason. I don't know the reason. One day I'll get to it. I haven't yet found the reason. So I'm saying, I don't know. The Torah doesn't really begin with Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. You read the whole book of Bereishis, all of Genesis, it doesn't begin with God said to Moshe. Even though what we just learned is that Hashem told Moshe, write down this whole thing. Because the Torah preferred to tell you a story from the beginning of creation all the way to Moshe, as though it were telling you the story leading up to Moshe. That's the style the Torah preferred. This is the way the Ramban is going. There is a Midrash that says that Hashem wanted Moshe to write that in the beginning of the Torah. And Moshe said, this was a point that Moshe argued with Hashem. We have a few places in Torah where Moshe argues. So there's a Medrash that says that Hashem wanted Moshe to put his name in the beginning and at the end of the Torah. And Moshe asked Hashem, I don't belong there. I don't want to be there. The Medrash says Moshe refused. What does it mean refused? He said, God, I'd rather not. Just like when Hashem says that he appears to Moshe, so Moshe wanted to make it seem smaller that Hashem appeared to him. It says, Vayikra el Moshe. Hashem singled out Moshe and called out to him. So Moshe asked Hashem permission to write the Aleph as a small Aleph. The beginning of the book of Vayikra, in our Torah, the Aleph is a small Aleph, as though it would say Vayiker. The coincidence happened and Hashem spoke to Moshe. Moshe didn't want, just like when Hashem spoke to Bilam, Hashem said, Vayiker, Hashem happened to speak to Bilam. Moshe wanted the same term for himself. So in Vayikra, when Hashem told him, no, you write Vayikra, so he asked, let me make the Aleph small. So we have places where Moshe wanted to diminish his role, and there's a medrash about that, but Ramban isn't going that route.
And also, when they say at the end, there'll never be another prophet like Moshe, so we know that his role is as good as it can be, but still as humble. And it's also at the end, he writes his own death.
So that, we have two opinions. We have a few opinions in Talmud. Yeah. Who wrote that? Yeah. Questions?
Yeah. If,
okay.
What's the halakha if you have a cemetery, Jewish cemetery, Jews, all Jews, but murderers? But all of them Shomer Shabbat. And now you have somebody who died, a Jew, is not Shomer Shabbat. Are you allowed to bury him next to this murderer who are Shomer Shabbat?
It's a good question for a Thursday night, but let's move on. It's a good question.
It's only people who have Shomer Shabbat. Yeah, but here's the thing. America, I don't
think it's our place
in
our house.
We have separate plots in a cemetery for people who are and aren't, yeah. It says that if you bury a pious person next to a wicked person, then the pious person's soul is bothered all the time by it. So we don't give people grades, but there are still nonetheless separations. Right. But we do. We are for hundreds of years. We've been careful that. People who cross certain red lines don't get buried with the regular folk. Now, the idea really begins in Tractate Sanhedrin, where it says the people that were executed by the courts received their own burial plots. They were not buried with the rest of the people. So you see over there, in order for a person to get executed by the courts, they have to be really bad, because it means there were two witnesses who warned him and said, don't do that, there's the death penalty for that. And he said, I don't care. And even so, he did it. So it's not so common. And even so, the courts had their own burial plots.
I've heard of a person in the 30s in Murder Incorporated who wouldn't kill on Shabbat. But he didn't keep Shabbat. He wouldn't take a contract to kill other people on Shabbat. He actually lived in the 70s, which in that line of work is incredible. He didn't get bumped off before that.
Yeah.
Anyway. It's kind of a little bit silly. I didn't know. I just learned tonight that I knew that there were, you know, people wanted to be buried in Tzaddik, and this was a big honor. But I didn't know that, because unfortunately, sadly today, the majority of Jews are not Shomer Shabbat.
Right.
And that's something that the Hever Kedisha takes into account.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
We had a student who got cremated, and his family claimed that was his request, and we couldn't disprove that. So he got buried in a non-Jewish cemetery. Non-Jewish.
Just the fact that he was here is almost good enough proof.
He wasn't here. Oh. He left. He left us, and he passed away far away from anything. Yeah. And I argued that he only asked for it because his family wouldn't ship his body in. And he figured that way he could get flown and he could get sent by air mail. That he did it with good intentions. But I couldn't prove it. And so halachically, once a person...
So I understand. Once you spend time here,
right.
I think that that's why you would request not.
I don't know. Again, I judge him, I give him the benefit of the doubt. That the only reason he said it was because in his mind it was more important to be buried in Israel than anything else. And he figured this way they could ship it, meaning they called me. They sent me by post his ashes, right? I think he didn't realize the severity of getting cremated, that it's an act of denial of the world to come, getting cremated. But nonetheless, he got buried, unfortunately. I mean, he wasn't planning on dying. I mean, he was young when he died.
Okay. I heard of someone that asked to be cremated, and the family after he died, the family buried him the right way.
Right?
Because his family knows better.
You kind of ask those people.
No, in Judaism, we consider it a very bad act to cremate, because right. We believe that a person in their passing, there's holiness to the body that housed the soul, and that it's in the person's interest to be buried whole in the ground, and it's a peace to the soul, and it's also a basis for coming back, when the dead will come back. It's true that people who are cremated against their will, so they're going to come back too. However God will do that, we leave it to Him. But for a person of their own choice to be cremated, to our mind, that was a lesson already before Torah that Avraham Avinu was teaching humanity. When Avraham Avinu worked to get a good burial plot for Sarah in Chayei Sarah, part of what he was doing was teaching humanity, you respect the body of the deceased, you bury them, you give them a respectful burial, and we are taught already from Avraham Avinu the importance of giving a proper burial. And cremation is a denial of all those concepts. Even if a person didn't mean it, from Judaism's perspective, that's the statement of cremation.
Because it says, "Thus you are, and thus you will return." And if you're created, you don't turn into dust the right way.
Right.
It's not a question you'll be able to answer in 2 seconds. But if there is a concept that souls have been in different bodies at different times, which one's coming back?
Right. It's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah.
ודיבר עמו ואמר לו חידוש העולם תחילה בסיפורים הקודמים לו. Hashem spoke to Moshe, told him about creation, told him the stories that predated Moshe's life, המפורסמים, the famous stories. Ramban is going with his approach, different than the Kuzari. Ramban is going with the approach that the stories that are recorded in Bereshis were actually world-renowned. They were famous stories. Kmo Shamalti, as the Ramban himself had described, Shamar, Avraham Avinu diber im Noach. So again, Ramban is going with the idea that Avraham spoke to Noach. It doesn't work the way we understand. Let's do the math. Noach was born in the year 1056. He lived to 900 and... this does work. When Ramban said Noach spoke to Adam, there we had a question. But if Noach was born in 1056 and he lived for 950 years, that means he passed away in the year 2006. Avraham Avinu was born in the year 1948. So there was an overlap between them of 48 years. So that works. Shehu Adam Hasheni LaBriya. So Nachmanides, Ramban, had worked with the idea that Noach is number two in the chain. That's where we had a question. If you work with the idea that coming out of the ark after the flood, Noach could declare, all of humanity comes from me, in that sense, Noach was a new beginning, and Avram had spoken to Noach, and Avram spoke to Yaakov Avinu, right? And Yaakov had a son, Levi, whose son was Amram, the father of Moshe, so it wasn't a far link. It could be Levi also met Avram Avinu. Nah, Levi did not meet Avram Avinu, for sure not. Avram Avinu passed away before Yaakov got married. Avraham?
Adam.
Okay. Adam, right. Right. So Avraham Avinu heard from Noah and his children about the flood. So they told Avraham the time they spent in the ark, how they left the ark, and how earth was a brand new earth when they came out of the ark, as though it was just created. וחיזר ואימת אותו במאוראים החדשים שהיו בעמיו לעיני כל רואה. And then, it's as though Moshe Rabbeinu gets a new proof that Hashem is master of the world. Notice that Ramban is taking a slightly different approach than the Kuzari. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in the Kuzari develops the following approach to Jewish belief. He says, imagine you hear about this king who is very benevolent and he's a wonderful person, and then they ask you, what can you say about this king? And your answer is nothing. I've heard things. But if this king were to send you cures for all your illnesses, and this king were to send you gifts that resolve all your problems, so then you could say, I imagine this king exists because I've received all these gifts from him. So your connection to the king begins with that. Then you say, I've also heard that in the course of time, he's done a lot of wonderful things in this world. But it begins with your connection to him. The same way, says Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, our connection to Hashem does not begin with the creation of the world. Our connection to Hashem begins with taking us out of Egypt. There we experienced Hashem's hand. And that's why we always say in Kiddush and throughout the Torah reiterates, I am Hashem who took you out of Egypt. It doesn't say, I am Hashem who created the world. So the Kuzari, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, is very strong in the approach. Through the Exodus from Egypt, we recognize Hashem created the world. And if we pay attention in Kiddush and in the Ten Commandments, the Torah first describes that Hashem took us out of Egypt, and only then takes it to Hashem who created the world. So we keep Shabbat, firstly, because Hashem took us out of Egypt and allowed us to rest, and secondly, because Hashem created the world and rested on the seventh day. But this is different than the Ramban. The Ramban is saying that the concept of Hashem creating the world was also something that Moshe was familiar with, and he knew it through his connection to Avram, to Noah, to Adam. And then Moshe Rabbeinu personally experienced all the wonderful miracles of the Exodus, which would then strengthen his knowledge of what he had heard earlier. This is very different than the Kuzari in that sense. The Kuzari starts with Exodus and works his way back to creation. Ramban says, creation was pretty much well known around the world. It was still fresh in people's mind. There was still common tradition. And Exodus strengthened that realization, that reality. It's not a stark difference, but it is a difference between Rabbi Yehuda Halevi and Ramban. Yes?
Exodus is the connection with Am Yisrael. And the creation, you think, would be everybody. I mean, the fact that if Abraham knew from Noah about the flood, that has a lot of, you know, weight to he learned, as I was told, you know, from observing nature, and you know, that's a
so. This is another point. We didn't put these two points together, but we mentioned earlier that the Kuzari views the beginning of Bereishis from creation till Moshe as one of the extraordinary feats that Moshe Rabbeinu did, that he was able to tell people the genealogy. Let me tell you how the world evolved from creation till now. It's been 2,000 years. I'll give you the exact summary, who bore whom and how things went. Whereas Ramban is saying, that's not so extraordinary. People knew it. I don't understand, but I'm saying there are two approaches here.
Right.
So Rabbi Yehuda Halevi going with his approach, so then he doesn't have this concept of Ramban at all. I'm saying, so you're right, meaning you're putting together two points of difference between Rabbi Yehuda Halevi and Ramban.
I see what you're saying, because then also with Ramban's point of view, which is harder to swallow in some ways, because if you had that, you'd think that there would be more belief in Hashem.
Right.
If people had this connection from...
So again, third point of difference between... you're connecting the dots. Ramban argued, going with his approach, that when Pharaoh said, Lo yadati et Hashem, what he said was, I don't know the Tetragrammaton. Once they said, Elokei ha'ivrim nikra aleinu, the God of the Hebrews, so that everyone knew the God of Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Again, Ramban is diverging a little bit from what we're familiar with from Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. You're right. Mr. Fleisch just connected three dots, but they are connected. Meaning it's an important point. Yes?
I have a question. Since we have the concept of Shabbat, obviously already in the Rashid, right? There's the concept already of Shabbat. So my question is, do you think that Adam HaRishon was also actually obligated to keep Shabbat?
So, we mentioned last week, I don't know the source for this, but Rabbi Soloveitchik writes that the initial intent of the Ten Commandments was for all of humanity. I don't know the source, so I'm not sure if Rabbi Soloveitchik really means that from Adam to Moshe, it was a concept for all of humanity. Again, I'm still searching for the source for what Rav Soloveitchik wrote.
Many languages, 7 days sounds like Shabbat. Many languages, 7 days, the Shabbat sounds also like Shabbat. Shubata, Sabbata, so I was wondering if maybe there's a concept.
I'd like to think that there was. I'm unaware of a good source for it. In many languages, the number 7 is like rest. Siete, siesta, zibin. Yeah, 7, yeah. What? No, but Zibin is like Sabbat. How do you say rest in German?
Rest? Ruhen, but you say for Shabbat. Ruhe,
Ruhe.
Ruhe. Okay.
But Saturday you say Samstag.
Okay. Okay, so we're up to the miracles of Moshe Rabbeinu. We'll try to get in a quick halacha, Shmirat